Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Before we get into our story, here is a brief message from our sponsor. Most of us now use a BlackBerry, iPhone, or Palm to check email when we're out of the office. But it's not enough. You need access to the files and programs on your office computer. GoToMyPC is the tool that will give you complete access to everything on your computer from anywhere. With GoToMyPC, you're actually operating your computer from any other computer. Access your programs, files, everything you need to work from anywhere. All you need is an internet connection. Our listeners can try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. That's a month of unlimited remote access free. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free trial. David Tellerman is the author of around 100 short stories, numerous poems, reviews, comic strips, and at least one novel. Publication highlights so far include appearances in Chiaroscuro, Space and Time, Flash Fiction Online, and John Joseph Adams's zombie best of anthology, The Living Dead. Our narrator is no stranger to longtime Variant Frequencies fans. He is known as TD0013. TD0013 is the writer and host of the podcast A Different Point of View, which is a look at the Star Wars universe through the eyes of an Imperial Stormtrooper. He can be heard on various other podcasts, lending his voice to many projects such as Billabub Battings and the Case of the Singing Sword, Three-Edged Sword, and the Metamore Cities Making the Cut. He has been seen on television in various programs, including the 2007 Rose Parade. TD0013 spends a lot of time doing charity work in full armor in such events as the MS Walk and visits to local children's hospitals. We are thrilled to have him read for us once again. Now, on to our story. Survivor Guilt by David Tellerman. A wounded man finds himself driven underground, into the purgatory of tunnels that honeycomb the ruined earth, battling for a life he knows is already lost. He is haunted by fever dreams of a time before the accident, of blue skies, green grass, of his long-dead mother. If the rats don't get him, if the poison coursing through his veins doesn't kill him, there are worse things hidden in the depths. Worst of all, may be the answers to the questions that have haunted his whole life.
Looking back, it's a simplicity that scares me most. A logical chain of bad luck ending in a leg wound and a snake bite, both now far past the point of treatment. I can feel the poison surging through arteries. I can feel myself dying. It's that simple. Under normal circumstances, I wouldn't have come underground. After the accident, all the vermin moved down into these dark places, gorged themselves on the shit and the slime. Under normal circumstances, I'd have steered well clear. But right now, I'm too slow to last long on the surface, and anyway, dying is dying. So here I am, far below the surface, feeding ammo into my .45 with numb fingers. So far it's proved effective at close range, but messy. The smell from the two rats I spread over the floor is drawing others. I can hear them skittering outside the pale corona of the flare light. Something darts across my peripheral vision and I lose a shot. When the echo subsides, I can still hear tiny clawed feet scratching in the dirt. Pulling at the tourniquet around my useless left leg, probably just making the bleeding worse, I start off again, following the trail of extinguished ceiling lights that's led me this far. The rats aren't the first to have lived here. With all the dirt, it's hard to say what these tunnels might have been. The walls have a metallic sheen and gutted access panels pock the surface. The last notice I passed read Blue Level in square letters barely visible beneath the grime. There were people down here once. Would have been easy to secure. Why did they leave? I can't be sure they did. But the noises from beyond the light of my sputtering flare definitely aren't human. I fire randomly and the sounds recede without disappearing. I keep moving forward, dragging my bad leg. Supporting myself against the wall, I have neither hand free, and the pistol bouncing painfully against my thigh is an empty threat. I stop occasionally to wave it at the pitch blackness around me, hoping the rats will know enough to equate it with violent death. The flare fizzles and gutters. It's already dimmed to a dull orange glow, and now it flickers red, throws vast shadows, and goes out. It was the last one, and while I've already established I'm going to die, I'd hoped somehow it wouldn't be like this, not being devoured by vermin in the darkness, fully conscious until one gnaws through an artery. I'm so caught up with this thought that for a long while, I didn't notice how I can still make out silhouettes against the black. At first, I assume my brain is playing tricks in the face of extinction. That's not it, though. In fact, it's something I haven't seen in a while. The light is electric. It glows from a passage branching from the main tunnel, about 50 meters ahead. I start towards it, glancing about warily. A dark shape passes too close and I fire. But I can't see anything for the muzzle flash. I don't care much. For the second time today, things seem absurdly simple. All I have to do is keep moving towards that light and not get killed. I make it to the adjoining passage without wasting further ammunition. The rats are staying close, too far away for a clear shot, but getting more confident with each instant. A few feints do nothing to deter them. They have the smell of blood forcing them on. At the junction, I stop to lean against the corner. The light is bright, unexpectedly so. It was masked by the struts of the wall, disguising how close its source was. Above the opening between double doors, a sign reads, "Elevator, restricted access." I break into a staggering run. Something comes at my face in a blur. I throw up my gun arm, catch the rat in a glancing blow, and watch it veer into the wall. Its neck snaps audibly. The other rodents chatter from what they consider a safe distance. I shoot at one to illustrate the mistake, catching it full in its bulbous stomach and it explodes, the exit wound proving larger than its body. Stumbling, I come up face first against the wall. My chest aches, my leg is agonizing, but there's a sound now, and the sound means I have to turn around. Hundreds of tiny feet scrabbling in the darkness. I get my head up just in time to see them coming. They're seething over and around each other, a wave of furious red eyes and glittering needles of claws and teeth. I stumble towards the lift. Behind me, rodents crumple into the wall. The brighter ones skid tight arcs in the dirt and keep coming with no loss of pace. By then I'm in, and as I lurch towards the floor, I lash out, aiming for the control panel, and through rare luck, striking it. The plated doors let out a deep whine, struggling against decades of disrepair, and then grind shut. Most of the rats miss the gap. A few are caught and cleaved in half. Two make it through and continue to sail, foaming and keening toward my face. I fire my last bullet into the first, duck under the other to club its skull until it stops squirming. Sinking to the floor, I'm overwhelmed by a high of relief. It's over. I'm still alive and nothing is trying to kill me. Maybe now I can lay down. Maybe now I can rest. Then I realize it isn't relief. It's the poison's inexorable creeping, though somewhere in the back of my mind is the understanding that if I sleep, I won't wake up. It's hard to care. I gaze at the metallic paneling beneath my legs, and though it eddies as I try and concentrate, I can see that it's covered in rat blood, scraps of viscera, and gory fur. I don't want to die here. I force myself to focus, and the ground stabilizes a little. After a minute, I feel strong enough to try and stand. I make it halfway before my legs crumple, but it's enough for me to try for the panel again, and as I go down, I catch the lowest button. When the contraption shivers to life, my body buckles completely, and I don't care what I'm lying in anymore. The last sensation before I pass out feels like downward motion, but I can't be sure. My mind is somewhere else, spiraling into a void with scarlet horizons, and everything is falling. The picket fence is painted white. The grass is very green. The houses, all the same, all oddly beautiful in the late afternoon sun, stretch as far as I can see. Outside the garage, a man sprays water in a glistening arc over an already luminous station wagon. Other men outside their homes drive clattering lawnmowers or lounge and read well-thumbed paperbacks. Other children play loudly in the clean light. A woman in a flower-patterned dress calls shrilly from the porch. She holds a tray of cookies. Their cinnamon scent drifts undiminished across the lawn. She says my name, as I know she will. And then I'm on my feet and running, convinced that if I can reach her and clutch those slender legs and not let go, then it will all be different somehow. There's a sound in the distance like thunder. It's impossible to ignore, and everyone is looking upwards. Everyone but me. I'm halfway to the porch in the great house, and why can't I move? I blink. It's a mistake because then time blinks too. The sky is white. The sky is black like a bruise. There are hands pulling me back, and I can't move. There's an endless scream in the air, and I can't move. The first thing I notice, even over the pain, is the brightness. After a while, I get my eyes open, and it's even brighter then. Electrical lighting on a scale I wouldn't have thought possible. My head is ready to explode, but at least I can feel my fingers and toes. My vision is cleared as well. What I took at first for the red haze is a flashing display sunk beneath the door controls. The crimson letters flicker between unauthorized access and security active in endless repetition. I've heard stories of abandoned government facilities, torn open by bombs or earthquakes, but kept safe by automated defense systems. I might be dead even sooner than I thought. Occasionally, concerted scavenging will take them down. I've heard there's a small community in Ohio living somewhere like this. Are these defenses still active? If they are, then at least it might mean a clean death. I draw myself to my feet and stagger out of the lift. Nothing blows my face off. Nothing moves. The corridor is empty and silent, except for a delicate electric background hum. The passage stretches to my left and ends in what was once a great pair of double doors. They lay blackened and buckled nearby, blown out, not in, which is strange. There are signs of violence everywhere, tarnished stains and cleanly singed holes in otherwise gleaming surfaces, and in one corner, the bottom half of a human skeleton. Everything is pristine and undisturbed. There's something desperately wrong about the combination of ruin and orderliness. Suspended from the ceiling is what looks like a gun turret, beside it a camera. The camera rotates as I move, but the turret remains still. I press on, through the gaping wound where the doors were. The next room is inhabited. I go for my gun, then remember I left it in the elevator, and that it was empty anyway. Fortunately, the child-sized machine in the middle of the room is no threat. It's careening in a tight circle on caterpillar tracks, muttering in clicks and beeps. It has two arms, and mounting something that looks like a rifle, but like the turret, it pays me no attention. Still, I stick to the edges of the room. It's a wide hallway, with rooms branching to either side, mostly offices and quarters lined with bunks. Daring to push open a door, I'm almost disappointed to find it's only a washroom. If it wasn't for the signs of violence everywhere, scorched traces of small arms fire and occasional skeletal remains, it would be pretty ordinary. I carry on through the open doorway at the end of the hall. The third area is different. Big. Dizzyingly big. It fits much better with my preconceptions of a hidden government bunker. The chamber might be 200 meters down its longest edge, though the lights have mostly failed and it's hard to judge. The scale makes me lightheaded, so I turn my attention to its contents instead. What are they? Boxes. or more like coffins, all identical, about 3 meters long, arranged in parallel rows that stretch left and right as far as I can see. A few are unspoiled and glow with pale blue light. Of the rest, the glass lids are either gaping open, shattered, or torn entirely off. I gather my courage for a few moments, and then check out one of the less damaged caskets. Even though I have some idea what to expect from the earlier carnage, I still bring up whatever's left in my stomach. I sit for a while on the floor, dazed, watching the thread that's trickling from my lower lip. It isn't so much disgusting or bloody, no worse than the scattered innards of a rat or the mess of my own leg. It's nothing like that. It's something much worse. In the container is the body of a young woman, attractive, maybe early 30s. Where the glass was intact, I could see her head, laid on a pillow. Her long hair was loose over angular shoulders and small, neat breasts. Below her stomach, just above her wrists, her body stopped. I could see the cross-section of her waist and the white curve of her spine. Where the glass was broken, the body had decayed to a skeleton resting in a few centimeters of slime. At the near end, where another patch of glass was intact, a pair of feet with polished nails hung impossibly from cadaverous legs. There was something precise about the destruction, something almost respectful. Who could have come across the naked body of a woman unblemished by disease or injury or withering radiation and left her to die without ever waking? Who in these fucked up end times of slow decay have chosen a quiet killing like that? I still feel sick, deep down now, and that sense of wrongness again. The red tinge at the edge of my sight is back, and blood is dripping from beneath the filthy layers of bandage around my leg. I don't want to pass out again, not here. Eventually I make it to my feet, brush the vomit from my mouth, and go on, supporting myself against those awful coffins, but not looking at them. The tiles shift back and forth in waves. I'm leaving a wet trail of crimson behind me in the darkness. I reach the far door, catch the frame, but then I can't stand anymore because I can't feel my legs. The red fills everything and I sense the floor coming at me, but I can't see it, don't feel the impact. The fence is white. The grass is damp under my knees. A ball is curving in the warm air, but it's enough to kneel and watch. Voices, water dripping onto asphalt, the discord merges. I let it wash over me. The sound separates. The screen door flapping on its hinges. I turn, and she's there. Her dress is flower-patterned, red, green, and white. The scent from the tray in her hands reaches me even here. I'm on my feet, running, but slower and slower. And then I'm not running at all. I'm like a fly caught in a web, but the web is noise, impossible to ignore, loud like a scream. My mother, skin black like ash, and the skeleton visible like an x-ray beneath her flesh. Her lips are open, but it isn't her screaming. What is she saying? Fragments skittering like paper peeling, she stands outlined in a fire that's all the sky, black, bruised black. Still, her mouth is open, framing words against the white noise, and I can't hear anything. Hands are pulling me back into the dark of the shelter, and I know that maybe now we'll all die, but I can't move. Everything in me is concentrated, listening for her words. But when they finally come, I don't understand.
I know you.
I'm awake, and it hurts to be awake, but the voices drag me out and I can't get back. There's a face on the wall and it's talking. It says,
I know you. I remember.
I made it through the coffin room. I'm on hands and knees in the doorway, and I can't think of any reason to get up. Instead, I look around, at an office with great stacks of what I figure must be computers piled against the walls, and glowing displays showing information that I can't read. The signs of violence are less obvious here, as though this is where the fighting finished up, or where it started, and there's the face on the wall. Only it's not a real face, too pale, too perfect, like china or chrome. Noise breaks across its surface and the features go to pieces for a moment. Who are you?
Starlag AI. I remember. I have the records of your birth in...
The face pauses.
The records are in Oklahoma.
Tex briefly replaces it. I recognize my own name, my proper name, my date of birth and other details. Family, schools, addresses, but nothing after my 8th birthday. The face reappears before I can read it all. Starlag AI, that's your name?
Yes, artificial intelligence. My name is Starlag. You were unconscious?
Yes.
You are unwell?
Yes. I cough and almost laugh, because this seems ridiculous. Yeah, I'm ill. I'm dying.
I saw you on my cameras. I thought you were dying, so I allowed you to come here.
This time the face disappears altogether, and bands of interference cascade diagonally across the monitor. Then abruptly the thing calling itself Starlag is back, and the voice says,
When you were unconscious, did you dream?
Yes.
I have also dreamed.
What is it saying? I force myself to concentrate. I can't stop remembering that pale, serene girl, the blue web of wires, varnished toes. What happened here? What was this place?
Tactical control. The war was fought here.
I don't remember the war.
It was unlike the conflicts that preceded it. It was fraught with lies and bluffs and empty promises. And in the end, with missiles.
Nuclear missiles? Nobody was ever sure. We just knew that something had happened. Called it the accident.
It was not an accident.
And the missiles. That's what they did here?
Yes, among other things. Tactical control.
Sat on the metallic floor, I try to prop my head in my hands. Talking to Starlag makes it easier to stay conscious. Somehow the conversation seems natural, as though I've come deep below the earth just to hear its words. But part of me wants to give up. It's telling me my history, answering all the questions I've wanted answering. It's interesting, but it's hard to stay awake. Better to keep talking, I guess. So what went wrong? Why is everybody dead?
They ordered a conclusive spread. I advised that it was not the best course. My function was advisory. I advised restraint.
But they didn't listen?
They said, the question is not how many survive.
And then you killed them all, while they were sleeping in those fucking coffins. I don't have the strength to sound angry. I'm not sure I even am.
The non-essential staff were in cryogenic storage, but they were not all asleep. They tried to bypass me, and we fought. They had forgotten my hands and eyes.
I remember the machine trapped in its endless cycle, and the camera moving to follow me. You killed them in their sleep.
So that others might live. So that I might.
The computer, or whatever it is now, phases in and out against brilliant shreds of color. The pattern's like some abstract representation of pain, and makes me dizzier. Maybe it's gone mad down here, alone, thinking over and over about what it did, what it should have or could have done. I close my eyes and that feels better. Then the light pricks the inside of my eyelids. When I open my eyes, the brightness is just as bad. To make the face stop flickering, I say, You did the right thing.
No, I made a mistake. I see that now.
It's no good. The pulsing is inside my head now. Starlag's face on the wall monitor is black, the porcelain skin coming apart in shreds of charred paper, so that I have to close my eyes, sink away from it. Green grass, white fence, the splash of water, then bruised sky in the dark of the bunker, pale faces in the darkness, hands holding me back. Flicker of the electric strip light like water, suffocating. And I know the sky is on fire. She's out there still, parchment skin peeling and evaporating, spiraling in the hot wind. I know I'm alone now. I know that I'm lost. And everything is wrong.
You are dying. There is not much time.
I'm only half conscious. It doesn't hurt anymore, but my sight blurs and the sound comes from a long way away.
You have to finish it.
Finish what? My own voice sounds strange to me.
I have seen the surface. It would have been better to let it end. I understand that now. You are dying. Will you help?
I get to my feet somehow and the ground moves crazily, everything breaking away in jagged lines, so I focus on Starlag's face and walk towards that. My voice sounds like my lungs are full of water, only it's blood, not water. I manage to say, "You want me to fire them? The missiles, the ones you stopped."
I cannot activate them myself. I need human authorization. It is not within my jurisdiction. My function is advisory.
Why? Don't understand. Why do you think I'd do that? When I cough this time, crimson splashes on the tiles.
It is all wrong.
And suddenly it's clear. I can see Starlight's face like glass, my own blood pooled beneath me. I lean my hands on either side of the screen, gaze at the AI's crystalline features, trying to understand the expression in its unreal eyes. Yes, everything is wrong. In that instant, I understand the simplicity of it. Remember my mother framed before a sky on fire. Understand it all, and how simple it is. Some things you aren't meant to survive. Some deaths you can only fight for so long. I look into Starlag's eyes, oceanic blue. Watch the flickering play of its madness to see the sanity behind it. I understand. Yes, I say again. Tell me what to do.
Thank you for listening to Survivor Guilt by David Tallerman, narrated by TD0013. Music was provided by Digital Juice and some of it created with Apple's GarageBand. Some of the sound effects were provided by SoundSnap at soundsnap.com. David can be found online at davidtallerman.net and davidtallerman.blogspot.com. TD0013 can be found at A Different Point of View at adpov.net. Digital Juice is at digitaljuice.com. Thank you from all of us at Variant Frequencies.
My lord, the war goes well, but rebel propaganda is convincing more and more systems to join the Alliance. If this continues, we could have a problem.
I believe it is time to unleash the Emperor's secret weapon. Communications officer.
Comms are open, my lord.
Command to TD0013.
Meanwhile, on Tatooine.
I'm telling you, babe. If you got a can opener, I got the time. Trust me. Once you pop the top, you can't stop.
Command to TD0013. Your Empire needs you.
God damn it! What now?
A Different Point of View, the Star Wars saga through the eyes of a stormtrooper. For all things TD0013, go to www.adpov.net. Don't be fooled by imitations and clones. This is the only point of view you need.
I'm Jen Geffinger.
I'm Kevin Batchelder.
And I'm Kurt Geffinger. And we are the Seekercast, a podcast for fans of the TV series Legend of the Seeker. We are a community-based podcast that works to keep you up to date on some of the best news, forum discussions, and interviews in the Seeker fandom. We also do a recap and in-depth discussion of each episode.
I thought it was very rich, the story. I was afraid it was going to be a little trite, but this really played out to be a very powerful episode in my mind.
The whole episode did kind of stay one step ahead. I felt like I kept having to catch up and try and figure out what was going on, which I like that. It's not predictable, so that made me very happy the way it was done.
And also, you know, correcting the mistake they made on the Sisters of the Light in season one. That was the only thing of season one that I cannot forgive.
It's okay, though, because we're staying focused on the series, right, Kurt?
So tune in to the SeekerCast at theseekercast.com or subscribe through iTunes.
Anyone else want to question my orders?
Hey, Kev, Dad's asleep. Let's do an experiment.
What experiment?
The one from Mythbusters, where they put the guy's hand in the water to see if he would pee on himself. Let's try it on Daddy.
Hey, kids, what are y'all doing?
Nothing, Mom.
Do you have your own little geeks? Need some ideas to keep them out of trouble? Well, check out the How to Grow Your Geek podcast.
We have cool kids' books and movie reviews.
We have awesome game reviews.
And we have interviews, advice, and a whole lot of fun. Check us out at
HowToGrowYourGeek.net.
I'm Trampas Whiteman, and I'm a Knight of Salamnia. As Solaris Ultimithus, my honor is my life. I ride into battle on the back of a dragon, battling the Queen of Darkness with the mighty Dragonlance. I also have these nifty droopy mustaches. I'm Trampas Whiteman, and I'm a Knight of Salamnia. The Dragonlance Canticle Podcast at dlcanticle.com. Dragonlance, what's your game?